The Gerontological Society of America, Meaningful Lives as We Age.
Welcome to our podcast series on aging in developing countries. I'm Barbara Bowers, Emeritus Professor at the University of Wisconsin School of Nursing. I'm here with Dr. Jing Wang, Assistant Professor at the University of New Hampshire School of Nursing. This presentation is part of a series of podcasts focusing on how culture, competing populations, health priorities, political conflict, resource limitations, how all of this influences older people and their families, as well as paid caregivers in several developing countries along a trajectory. As longevity increases in nations across the world, developing countries are really starting to feel the impact of population aging. It's surprising to many, I know it was to me, the current estimates suggest that by 2050, 80% of the 2 billion older adults across the globe will be living in what are currently developing countries. Our series explores how these countries, at various stages in development and with varying levels of resources and different cultures, are starting to respond to this demographic shift. Now a bit about China. China has experienced rapid economic development and is now considered an upper-middle-income developing country with a very rapidly aging population. Consistent with other developing countries, China considers 60 as the entrance into old age. Almost 20% of its population is currently over 60. There are now over 254 million people in China over 60. The number of old Chinese is expected to surpass 400 million. By 2040, this would comprise 28% of the Chinese population. In addition to increasing longevity, the one-child policy enacted in 1979 has clearly contributed to an already falling fertility rate. And the recent relaxation of the one-child policy in China in 2015 hasn't really had much of an impact on the fertility rate. It hasn't really reverted back to what it was or even increased. The result of all of this is fewer available caregivers, which is a serious challenge to a country and a culture with very strong traditional family caregiving values and practices. This traditional expectation for elder care is coupled with an underdeveloped, or maybe more accurately, I should say, a developing welfare, pension, and social support system. Our guest today, Dr. Hung Lin Chen. Dr. Chen, a social work professor with expertise in aging. She serves on the leadership committee of the Social Work Education Association of China, is a committee member of the Shanghai Preventive Medicine Association branch of social medicine. She's also been the Sino-Sweden Linnaeus Palm Visiting Professor at the Social Work Department in Gothenburg University, Sweden, since 2014. Dr. Chen was also a Sino-American Fulbright Scholar in the Gerontology Program at the University of Southern California from 2015 into 2016. She's published several books and more than 70 peer-reviewed papers based on aging and long-term care. Her current research focuses on the use of technology to support older people, certainly a promising area. Our moderator is Dr. Jing Wang, an assistant professor at the University of New Hampshire. Dr. Wang, over to you.
Hello, Dr. Chen. We're so glad to have you here. Could you first explain for whoever is listening to the podcast now what the structure for caring for older people as they become more dependent in China as they age?
So basically, I think from the history tradition that we have a tradition of taking care of older people on their own family. So we, most of us, will think it is the offspring's duty to taking care of old people. As far as the development of welfare system, I think the society as well as family also want to have formal structure to support the old people who need care. And therefore, we developed like the work welfare, people who have employment and they have some insurance to rely on if they need them. And as for people who don't have a full employment, then perhaps they'll have some other arrangement. I think now we would like to divide this topic into two scenarios. One is in rural China, one's in urban China. So in rural China, we have launched our rural older people care insurance. This was spreading in the Chinese rural area since 2014. And then a lot of people joined them by purchasing this kind of insurance by their offspring or by themselves. And total money that they paid for it is around $150 per year. So for example, in some rural area, they may get this benefit since the age of 55, but some others may get this benefit since the age of 60. And it depends on the municipal governance to implement this policy. And as to the urban area, we have to divide this into two sectors too. Mm-hmm. So one of the major population would be people who have employment before, and the other would be those who don't have employment yet. So for the people who have employment, they benefit from the old age allowance, or in another way, it's kind of old age insurance too. And they're paid from jointly the company and their own personal account. So after they are retirement, then this benefit will apply to them in terms of medical insurance, medical expenditure, and also some long-term care expenditures. But as we understand, this long-term care benefit will also depends on your case. For example, if you were evaluated by a special evaluator that you need several criteria for care, and then you can benefit from certain amount of this insurance. But if you don't have this particular scheme, and then probably you have to pay by yourself. So in urban area, if you have this HUKO or residence permit or residential certificate in this urban area, you basically could enjoy this city level welfare system. Medical care scheme is for people who age 65 and above, who would need particular care in their old age. But after 2 years of pilot study, they decided to launch this long-term insurance. But then this long-term insurance has been introduced to other parts of China. So I think mainly also focus on urban area too. I don't think currently the rural area has its long-term care insurance. So it's only for urban area. And this long-term care insurance divided into several levels. So they will send an evaluator to your home and to evaluate your functional abilities and then to decide which level you are in. And then they will equip with certain amount of care that they could subsidize you. And so I think many people don't pay for extra pay if they receive this long-term care from the government. But some others, if they cannot cover all the expenditure, they have to spend some money from their own pocket, which is amount to like 10%. So it's not a huge amount. So that's the overall picture of how it organized currently, at least in Shanghai or in many urban areas in China. Yeah.
Dr. Chen, you have given us a very nice overview of the new insurance scheme. It sounds like this mostly covers care at home, but does the insurance you describe also cover nursing homes?
So actually, this long-term care insurance applies to everybody. If you are a resident in this municipal region and you are qualified to enjoy this kind of welfare system, this applies to both institutional care and in-home family care locations. So if you are qualified to several criteria, like for example, if you already live in the institution and this institutional governance will send you a evaluator, and then to set out the accurate level that you need. So the government will pay this nursing home instead of paying your own family household. So in that sense, but actually the money goes to the caregivers who deliver this long-term care to you. So if they provide care to this residents in the institution, they can receive this long-term care insurance reimbursement. So that's what the arrangement. But if you are living in the community and the evaluator come to your household to evaluate you, and then they will send the qualified practitioners to deliver service to your household. And that is, it's actually a very similar setting. So the money would be the same.
Okay. To follow up on what you just said, does the money for home care go to the family or directly to the caregivers?
I think that goes directly to the caregivers, which is the qualified practitioners. So, for example, Shanghai municipal government organized a training for this kind of caregiver professionals. So to deliver those kind of service to people who live at home or institutions, and the money goes to their allowance or goes to their part of the payment, but not goes to the individual themselves. And if in the nursing home, that's the same thing. So the institution will get some money from the long-term care insurance paid by this insurance to their institution. But finally, the money will go to practitioners who deliver this care to the care recipients. So there was once the discussion amongst the Chinese government and as well as this academic field that should they encourage informal money kind of support, financial support for people to deliver this informal caregiving. For example, if the elder people want to hire a relative to take care of them, and they will get a subsidy from the government or from the insurance directory. However, I don't think this kind of scheme has been implemented.
Okay. How about hiring caregivers at home then?
That's my estimation, because there would be a real lack of, a real shortage of human power who can deliver service. And if the family still have this tradition to taking care of old people, it would be more reasonable to sponsor them or to give them a little support in that perspective. We've noticed that actually a lot of caregivers, they cannot deliver their service on home. So previously, they came to the household during the daytime or sometimes in the evening. They can accompany the older people for 1 or 2 nights, but charge for certain fees. But in the pandemic time, it's very difficult to do so because every household has a strict rule of a visitor. So most of the caregivers were performed by their family members. And if the family member have to do that like 24/7 and they actually cannot go to work, so for people to think about some welfare arrangement in that per se. So I think there would be a possibility of thinking about this arrangement later in the future.
Thank you, Dr. Chen. This is so important. And could I go back to something you said earlier? I believe many older people in China spend much of the years with their children. They often provide care for grandchildren in a city different from where they have formal residence. They choose to live in a different city with their children and their grandchildren and provide care. So in that case, how would health insurance work for them when I understand that the health insurance in China is connected to people's formal residence? So what happens when they spend time in a different city where they don't have formal residence?
So that, as far as I know, if your mother or father moves together with you with adult children to a city like Shanghai, they don't have the local insurance.
Okay, so they don't have the local insurance. So how would insurance work for them then?
So it will be a process of combining the insurance from your parents' previous employment place to Shanghai as a new residence household. And then when they come to Shanghai with their adult children, actually have applied for a resident permit. And then you don't automatically have this right to enjoy the local welfare system. And it will be take a few years for you to kind of integrate into the system in reality. For example, if you go to the hospital, you cannot use your medical insurance. And even if you have a medical insurance card from other provinces. So this is a kind of institutional barriers that Chinese government are thinking about solutions to that already. So we would probably expect in the following 2 or 3 years, this will be turned into reality. So previously, for example, if I took my mom to visit a doctor, and then she actually cannot pay from her medical insurance card. She has to go back to her own residence area, household, like hukou registration area, to claim the reimbursement from that medical unit. So it is actually in reality, it needs some process to implement those connections. So if you don't have this local household registration, if you are not a registered resident in the area, perhaps you can participate in the community activities because you are reside here for like at least 6 months, and then you will be regarded as a resident. But then in terms of social welfare, you need some more formal procedures to go through. So household really matters a lot. If you're thinking about Shanghai's elder caregiving services.
So could you talk a little bit more about what are the home care workers and who works in nursing homes?
Basically, there would be probably 3 kinds of nursing homes in Shanghai, if I can say it. Big Shanghai is an example. So one is private, the other is public. So the government funded completely. And the third would be the governance, but then run by the private sector. So those are the 3 basic categories of nursing homes in Shanghai. So in terms of the money they get, the funding that they get, they charge different fees. And of course, if they can provide different categories of service, for example, not every nursing home in Shanghai could provide care unit for people with dementia. So if you provide this care unit and then you charge more. So if you provide services for people with special needs and you charge more, particularly for people with disability, we have different layers of disability degree. And then if you are completely relying on, dependent on other people, and then they will charge the most expensive fees.
So based on their level of dependence, how would they provide the care then?
If you talk about the nursing homes in Shanghai, most of the nurses or nannies are from other places. They are what we so-called like migrant workers. And it's different than migrant workers in the United States because probably you're talking about people from another country. But then here in Shanghai, we talk people from other provinces. And only like around 10% of them are from local residents working as caregivers. And so majority of them are from other provinces and come into Shanghai, they apply for some kind of an informal job. And then when they gain some experiences of caring old people, and probably if they're working in a private sector, in a private nursing home, then if you are like a high level of the nursing home, they will provide some training session for these caregivers. So after they get some experiences, it's very easy for them to find a better job as amongst these caregivers. And most of their needs are actually getting a more payment to support their family in other places. So for example, like support their children for education or support their own parents to make a living. And so they prefer, of course, higher payment. So if you want to talk about some stories in detail, and even if there's only like 20 US dollar difference between the monthly payment, they will probably to jump into another job. So that's the common stories in Shanghai now. But I think it will change, for example, like in the coming 10 years or so, that we need more like nurses and also like the care aides. And that will be some challenges in future too.
I know we've talked a little bit about this when I was asking about the health insurance. Could you talk about why people come from other provinces to the larger cities like Shanghai in China? Why there aren't more local people doing this work?
Well, I think this is an interesting question. I don't think it is not a desirable place to work. And probably they think it is not a desirable industry for them to do those kind of jobs, like caregiving job. We also, perhaps situation is changing. But according to the data that we conducted the field observation, as well as its in-depth interview amongst the several agencies, both public and private, amongst these caregivers, they have strong kind of self-image, and they don't think this is kind of a presentable job, most of them. So very few of them feel proud that they can perform job very well, and they kind of feel proud they become a caregiver. But the majority of them don't think it is a decent job, and they think it is a low entry level and don't need very skillful techniques. They have houses and probably their own life poverty, which actually worthwhile to for them to support their living. And if they rent some household outside, they can get a good rent to support their daily living. So in that sense, not many people would love to go to work. And if they, I mean, to do job in the nursing home, and if they have certain amount of resources themselves, they prefer to even not working, you know, and to stay home. And in another study that I conducted in the community level, and many of the people we interviewed actually are from Shanghai, local people, but they are kind of caring volunteers working in the community, and age about range from like 40 to 65. For example, if the government, like the subordinate government sector would be the community or neighborhood, and that neighborhood would like to invite them to do this kind of caregiving job in the community for a particular household. Like you make connections once a week with them, with the household that you're taking care of, and also get connected to the old people who are living alone, and so on and so forth. So those are the caregivers in this community that are hired by the neighborhood. But then they don't feel like that we regard them as who own if I take this and talk together with Dr. Wang. And they would like to be regarded in another profession. So they don't like their original sentence would be, I'm not like the caregivers from other provinces. I'm not like migrant workers. I'm employed by the government. So even they are delivering service for old people, when they are doing similar job with the migrant workers, they don't like them will be regarded as the same as these migrant workers. So in that sense, I think it's about the value that they perform in this profession. They feel this profession is our basic level and has not many respect. They cannot receive many respect from the society and even is in great need. So that's kind of the situation that I noticed.
That's very interesting. I think it's the same in many places that caregiving work, especially for older people, is considered not very good, not very respectable. What do other people think about caregivers? I mean, does the public also see them as low-level workers?
I think most of them appreciate the people who can support them as a caregiver, you know, like deliver respite care for them to take care of their parents with dementia once a week or several hours a day and something like that. So in their conversation, I noticed that it's less prejudice, you know, less negative intentions or worse towards them. So I think they pay them quite well if they hired by a private family because they need them. And also this care job is not easy and it's going to be very demanding for people who take care of people with dementia too. So I think the things are changing, but it still needs some time. So if you talk in public, probably that the Shanghai government has done a great job to advocate the importance of caregiving job in this aging area. For example, in some show or some particular programs, also the government has supported in great distance to educate those caregivers to be more professional. It takes time for people to recognize and to acknowledge or contribute to their family, to the society, and also to the community.
People who work in three types of nursing homes, is there a difference in who works there? Are they nurses? Are they volunteers?
You know, the three categories of nursing homes are caring aides. I think this is more accurate to describe them. They are not nurses. And of course, they are not volunteers, they get payment. But if you think about this function of those care aides, they are not delivering medical care, of course. So they mostly are caring daily living per se. So for example, they support those kind of routine and care living process. And the educational training that they get actually vary. I think most of the agency will require people who work in the institution have the basic level of professional qualification. I think those kind of training were organized by their local government. But this training only like lasted for 2 weeks. And 2 weeks for you to have an entry level to work in a nursing home. But they will provide continuous training in many programs. Some of them delivered by NGO, some of them delivered by government. And as far as I know, for the public nursing home, they will send their caregivers to this training from time to time because they are required to sponsor them and also to send them to training regularly. But in the private sector, I'm not quite sure. Probably if their workload is too high, they will not guarantee we have the time for the education or for continuous education. Yeah, so the basic level to get a certificate in working in a nursing home will be like 2 weeks as far as I know.
Okay. Is there a standard training program or does it vary?
I don't think there is a standard training because in terms of different organizations, for example, if a high-end nursing home, you know, to broadcast it, to be proud of that they can provide very high-level training to their caregivers. So they will say, okay, we have this certificate training process and this process has been approved by ISO or something like 1990. So those were kind of advertisement, but if you look into the detail, I don't think this is kind of standard procedure. And for the government, of course, they will also issue a certificate. And if you think this is the basic level, and that could be considered as a compulsory standard, but then in real practice, the private sector can, of course, hire people who don't have the certificate and train themselves. So in that sense, I don't think we can say there would be a very compulsory standard procedure.
So there is no compulsive certification and training in private nursing homes. Did I understand it correctly?
I think so. If they need the human resource, they will, you know, find some, even if they are in shortage of human resources, they will find somebody to do this right away.
Yeah, it is universal that we are having a hard time finding qualified caregivers.
It's the issue in China too. That's why this people who hire for a family as a caregiver or nanny will be more and more expensive. So the market tells everything, but it varied from place to place. For example, in Shanghai, they are trying their best to hire some nursing care aide from other provinces. And I think I contacted with number two, a welfare institution in Shanghai. They hire several people from Yunnan province who graduated from college as an elder caregiving profession. So I think this would be a trend in these major cities. And also in rural area, it really varied from time to time. For example, in a small or middle-sized town, they have actually plenty of human resources, but I don't think the people are willing to work in this nursing home. So it's also difficult for them to find the qualified care aide. And even they can provide a certain amount of their, salary, but then the salary won't be charming enough for them to, to work in this industry if they are not obliged to. So it varies from situation to situation. Also, it's relevant to the culture and also relevant to those institutional arrangements too.
Are these language differences from province to province that make it difficult to communicate? Or is the language similar enough and wouldn't be a problem?
Yeah, language would be an issue. But most of the old people, they understand the Mandarin. Even some of them don't speak very well Mandarin, but they understand it. So it's not difficult for them to understand caregivers. But sometimes it will be difficult for caregivers from other provinces to understand the old people in the cities. Yeah.
This is very interesting. Could we go back to that? Both the personnel who work in nursing homes and home care, what happens if someone actually needs nursing care or more medical care? If it's just care aides, how would that happen?
Okay. So Shanghai has several schemes to provide medical care for people who leave home or prefer to leave home. And even in the institution, there will be some other arrangement from the institution too, because they will hire a nurse or hire a doctor work particularly in a nursing home. And that's the basic level. That's the basic requirement for you to open an institution to service. So that will be another setting. But in this household, in the community, to traverse to aging at home, then the government has several schemes that you can have family doctor or family nurse, to visit you. But then this scheme only covers partial of the nanny. Of course, and the long-term care insurance also covers part of it too. But then we have a lot of debates towards that, because if people need medical care frequently, this long-term care insurance is not enough to cover all the expenditure. And then if people, some people don't need that at all, that they may also enjoy this kind of welfare benefits, which is not necessary. So this would be some kind of reevaluation and regulation process should be conducted to this kind of policy implementation process. So we are kind of still looking at it. And then it's very from case to case.
Okay. You said earlier that it's mostly the care aides who work in nursing homes, but it sounds like there are also nurses and doctors who go there.
But there are very few of them, because if nursing home who have the capacity of 300 beds for old people, and they can accommodate 300 residents in their institutional care, and they probably hire two or three nurses, or like one doctor. But the doctor is not supposed to be working there like whole day. So they will have like a particular working hour for that.
Is there much geriatric training for the nurses and the doctors who work there? As I know, there are lots of places where geriatric specialized training is pretty new.
Geriatric training is pretty new, and I think that it's not enough. Not every nursing home have a range of that. I don't think it is most common that the nursing home will have connection with nearby hospital. So they will have an agreement with them that if they have special case, and they will send them there as a green channel that they call. So they will use those kind of advertisement to attract people who apply for their residency in this institution too. So they have currently like a geriatric ward in the hospital, most of the hospital. So like 3A hospitals in Shanghai, most of them have geriatric ward. And in the community level, I don't think there would be enough trained medical doctor who has geriatric knowledge.
So what happens if someone does not have residence in the district and they go to the hospital? Will they still treat them?
Of course they will treat them, but then the money will be paid by this own person and not covered by medical insurance in this municipal area.
What happens if they don't have any money to pay?
People don't have enough money to pay. If this client will transfer from the nursing home, that will be arranged by the nursing homes. But if for all the people who need urgent care, they will go to the hospital themselves. And the situation really varies. I think some of the people, they don't have local benefits. And if they can have somebody to pay for them, that's easier. That's the most easier way. But if they don't have any payment and not any money with them, it depends on different hospitals. Some of the people are more warm-hearted. I mean, they can support this immediately. But then some other institution, they probably, I think the problem is that it's too busy for everybody, particularly for the hospitals. They have a lot of patients all the time. So I don't think they have enough care or enough systematic arrangement for people who don't have money with them to go to the hospital.
So here's my question. If you were to select a nursing home for your family member to reside in, how would you do it? I mean, what are some of the factors that would affect your decision? Like, how would you choose a nursing home?
So you supposedly that if I send my family member to a nursing home, I think I will just send them to some reliable connections with my academic experiences, because some of them have very close relationship with my academic research. So I know their quality and I know how did they perform their daily caregiving process. So that's my first concern. And actually, that's common practice of many Chinese people. And they will judge their quality of care by other people's referral and other friends' referral. And the second, probably, I would say that some of the acquaintance who run this nursing home, they really deliver a horrible care for this, their residents. So their nurses or carers are considerate, and also they are very responsible for their care they were giving the team. And also they have a system of like evaluate their working performance. I think it is trustworthy, you know, to send them to those institutions. I think they can provide basic care very good, very well, but then I don't think it can fulfill other levels of needs of this particular person. That is what we call like person-centered care process. So I don't think they can deliver those kind of desirable care for each person. And they did not deliver a kind of a routine. And their routine level would be satisfactory at this moment.
This is interesting. You mentioned evaluating the care. How is the care evaluated? Is there a standard or each organization figures out how it's going to do it?
I think it's most likely about each employer in China. At the end of the year or every kind of season, they have an evaluation for their work performance. And in a nursing home, and I think the some of the nursing homes that perform this kind of evaluation every year, and some of the institutions perform this kind of evaluation every half a year. So they will kind of have an evaluation from their administrative team. For example, the principal of this nursing home and also the vice principal of this nursing home, they will probably conduct this performance evaluation process. And also this connects to the payment of the annual payment. For example, they have a monthly salary, but at end of the year, it's very common for them to have a bonus. And then how to divide the bonus level is actually connected to this performance evaluation form. But it's really varied from institution to institution. Some of the institutions have very standard procedure, and their human resources kind of tie in, and they have this every monthly checklist for every people's performance. But then in most of the agencies, I don't think they can spend some to spare a human resource officer to take care of this. So most commonly is the people who in governance of this place will inform this kind of procedure to decide who has how much proportion of bonus at the end of the year. It's an institution gives to the staff.
Okay, so it sounds like the evaluation is done more about how each staff person performs rather than the outcomes for the whole organization. It's really sort of like focused on the individual staff.
Yeah, but then you remind me about something else. And actually, the government have, particularly from Civil Affairs Office, they have regular invitation towards all the nursing homes in their municipal region. So, for example, every half year, they will hire some kind of external evaluator to go to the nursing homes to conduct the four kinds of like filling their standard form to evaluate their performance, but not to individual nursing PRAs. It's for this whole institution. And that was performed annually or twice a year, actually.
So what do they look for? Like, what do they actually evaluate?
It's a structured questionnaire, and they have this hardware or software. You can divide it into two parts. So software probably regarding to this caregiving qualification or this implementation process from this. Actually, I think they don't interview their caregivers. They interview probably the master of this place. So the evaluation is kind of routine, but then they have some objective indicators too. So the team will look around, and also we will look at the facilities and look at particularly the safety arrangement and also the functional area that they can deliver some rehabilitation services. So to look at the hardware and then to score them. And that's one part of it. But to the subjective part, I think very few of them will have this interview with these caregivers.
What do you think people look at?
Well, one of the important things is the money they charge. So some people will judge them by their fee, and also how do they match the fees, what kind of service that they equipped with this fee level. And besides that, they probably will hear from other friends or some other people's recommendations. So that is the major resource for them to make decision when they have to choose our institution to live in. And of course, there will be some more advertisement if the agency will deliver some material about the qualifications or some good qualities of service, and then also some good stories for them that they could get. But I think the first two reasons would be most important. And I think there would be some other factors affecting their decision-making process too, is to make things relevant to a location. So most of the people who want to arrange our institution care for their family members, they will look into the travel distances. For example, they want to visit their parents on the weekend, and they will choose a closer by institution, or at least not so far. I have a good friend who won a very cozy nursing home, but in a suburban area of Shanghai, it's in Jinshan, and it's, of course, it's like 2 hours even driving. We can drive and it takes you 2 hours to go there. I think even a corridor is very good. But then not many people would like to send their families there.
You said they evaluate services. So what would you look at in terms of the services?
There were more than 80 categories of service which nursing at home. And I think they categorize them to different dimensions. For example, if you have sleeping problem, and then it will take care of your sleep problems. And also, if you have some food or digestion problem, probably they will kind of categorize those kind of services in those categories. And also, they will kind of judge you by your functional ability. So we know that IADL have like 8 indicators. So in each of the indicators, probably they have equipped some kind of service towards that. But they have wider dimensions. I think it's developing. For example, if you deliver service in the daycare center in the community, they also provide you like more than 50, you know, categories of caregiving process. And then you will probably evaluate this client when recruited, and then to identify several categories that they need this kind of service. So if you evaluate the service that he is receiving, probably you will get a similar form that what kind of service did you get and how did you evaluate them. And as I'm satisfied with this quality and I'm satisfied with this process. So when service sector, for example, like a non-government organization, we will purchase the service from a government and they deliver service in this community for the residents there. And they will always have this evaluation process. But then the evaluation, as you notice, is actually very crucial. And some of the evaluation process will be just a very simple apps in this smartphone. And then you, when you finish this service in the recipient's home, and you will ask the recipient to score you. It's like you go to our bank, and then you have to send out the option in this in the button that you are satisfied or not satisfied or anything else. So that is the common way that the NGO will perform this kind of evaluation, because they have to report to the government and how they tell the recipients about their service quality. Besides that, I think in many other places, and then probably if this government will deliver this evaluation, they will have similar structure to evaluate this kind of particular services that the recipients get. And they will probably ask this, the people who are in charge of this nursing home about those character, to ask himself to report about the quality that they deliver the service. So in my understanding, I don't think this evaluation team will really hire the residents or ask the residents' experience. But for public nursing home, I think many people do. If they have the third sector evaluation, and their evaluation team will come into this other established nursing home and to ask the older people who live there.
Can you say a little bit more about who would go to public versus private? Is there a just a matter of you have the money, you go to the private, or it's kind of different in the context in China?
Actually, some public nursing home has really high-end quality, but then the capacity is limited. So not every people can have the free choice to go there, and we have to queue in line. So it really matters what kind of your chance that you get. But to the private sector, and some of the institutions charge a high fee, and probably they can provide very beautiful like structure for you to leave, a more spacious place and more better quality of food. But in terms of the other kind of professional services like rehabilitation or Alzheimer's care, and it's actually really depends on. So it's not a matter that you paid more, you could really have enjoyed better quality of service. Even in public service, and you can enjoy very wonderful, excellent services too.
Okay, so anyone technically can go to a public nursing home. You just have to wait in line.
And who affiliated with this geographic area, the first number one nursing home in Shanghai, public one, only receives the residents in the Xuhui area. And even narrower, it can only receive residents living nearby neighborhoods. So it is divided by the geography. They don't have concerns about geographic.
So Dr. Chen, what do you see as the biggest challenge for care of older adults in China? And what do you think might happen?
In this universal environment that we are in shortage of caregivers, no matter now or in future. So I think probably we have to think about better replacement for the human resource. And one of my research area would be gerontology technology. And we're thinking about to support older people in their needs by different techniques and also equipment. But then it needs time to go through. And also if you invent something that in your expectation you will help the older people, maybe the old people don't like themselves. So I think those are all challenges for the future society. Yeah, I think the government is looking at it. And also last year, I was the principal investigator of number 14's five plan in Shanghai's government. And they are implementing this smart city for care of people plan. And I want to encourage the capital and also this market to focus on developing those kind of equipment and smart settings for older people to support them living at home independently. And even they are disabled or something, but then they come up with their man, it's not an easy job. And they also have this long process of doing some pilot study as well as to receive these feedbacks from the clients and also to modify them and improve them.
So can you say a little bit more about the smart environment for older people?
Okay. It has like several settings of it, and they asked me to provide a basic structure. So the very beginning, they send out a call for this government-funded research project, and it's also a government consultancy research project. And then, so I took this project out because several people applied, and then they expected, then I was the one who granted, and then they sent me their expectation. It's like, there are already many industries devoted their money and effort and also human resource to investigate or doing research in how to support old people with smart devices. For example, information technology, VR technology, robot, and computer science, some devices on that or some kind of sensors. But then they feel that if there is a product and also there is an old people group who need this kind of support, and it doesn't mean that they will, the two of them will go with each other very seriously. They think they need a real study to look into what happened and why this product is not in favor of old people and how could then really benefit older people with the support of the smart device devices. So many of the company actually have some inventions about those kind of products, but then they didn't sell them well. So for example, if they want me to identify the major domain that the old people need help. So I identify like the food delivery and also people with disability and people with Alzheimer's disease. And I think I identified 8 kind of scenarios for them to look into this real situation. So when this kind of needs will happen, the old people who cannot cook, that they have to have this food delivery, what kind of service they want and what kind of proper payment function they would be comfortable with. So those are the real scenarios that the company would like to know, as well as government would like to sponsor. So there would be like 8 categories that I deliver this kind of report to, because it's a 1-year project. And I think I set out the priority, like to meet and to move around and to avoid disability. And also for people with Alzheimer's disease that will go out and get lost. Those kind of areas would be the most urgent. Of course, there's a medical consultation too, for the internet medical consultation. So I think I also give this like the final report, like, first of all, you have to educate all the people themselves and how to get used to this information technology. For example, how to use the existing technologies to really benefit them. And if you educate when they're old, then it's not enough. It's not useful. And you have to do it in the lungs and how to do it. And there are a huge body of college for older people. So I suggest the government to devote some resources to educate, to use this kind of elderly college to deliver those kind of information technology education programs to them, and so that they can enjoy more benefit from this improvement of technologies. And for certain other scenarios, for example, for the people who get lost because of dementia, and we identify several key products and look at the shortcomings. And we interview all the people and see what they would like to improve them, and also the caregivers too. And for this like internet medical consultancy services, and we interview the nursing home masters as well as the older people themselves, and how we like to deliver this kind of services. Even both sides are institutionally qualified. For example, if you have to have the service delivered in the institution where all the people live there, and you have to guaranteeing that this medical unit is qualified and also this nursing home is qualified to be engaged in this mutual agreement. And then this internet kind of medical consultancy could be paid by this medical insurance of all the people. And if there's no mutual agreement, then it cannot actually pay from them. So and that encouraged the nursing home to negotiate with some of the medical unit. And how does this happen? How can we support a more accurate internet diagnosis? So it actually is very difficult if you implement a real scenario. For example, the speed of the internet varies too. So I think the government really think it's necessary to employ advanced technology or develop the technology to support people who need better, particularly for old people. So I think they are paying more and more attention, and they're aware that there will be a real shortage of caregivers in future. So they are trying their best to build more, you know, support for the technology to say. For people with dementia, we don't think we have particular medicine to be very efficient to rescue them or to recover from their symptoms. But then we recognize that actually non-pharmacological intervention play a role. It actually is worldwide. And if you want to promote brain health or some behavior health, and always if you have, you know, this kind of non-pharmacological practice regularly, it will benefit you. And there are so many literature talking about this. But then it's not enough, I think, because it depends on what kind of people you are. If you have less perseverance, of course, it affects the effect that you performed. And then, so I'm thinking about to connect this gerontic technology together with Alzheimer's disease intervention. I'm thinking about to work together with business field and to develop some kind of practice tool, and then to encourage or some other kind of function to encourage people would like to join this like intervention process and can also maintain it as long as possible. So I have like a platform for WeChat function. It's our WeChat apps, a public account called Neurological Intervention Process. And then we have several tools that people can use at home. For example, some meditate or mindfulness. So those kind of video that you can perform every day. And also some finger exercise and some body exercise. We have videos on them. And we also produce regular paper that following this recent publication from worldwide and talking about this non-pharmacological intervention. So those are the things that I'm focusing on. And I hope there will be something really innovation to support people to maintain this exercise in those kind of activities like finger exercise and all other brain health exercise too. But then it's really need our mechanism to keep you in it. So we take references from like Keep. There would be some other apps that we use regularly in China. And we'll take references from other apps too. But we are looking for resources and also looking for a suitable person who can develop this basic level software into more advanced one that can benefit more people, particularly for people who live in rural China.
Thank you very much, Dr. Chen. You and your team have been doing amazing work to improve elder care in China. Thank you again for being our guest today.
Thank you so much, Dr. Chen. This has really been interesting. China's clearly made great progress toward developing a system to care for its older people. It's also clear that China is grappling with the impact of increased longevity and lower fertility rates, as are many other countries, not just developing. So finding new ways for the government and private sectors to supplement the care provided by families seems to be a current focus of effort in China. I think worldwide, this is also a really important issue, like what's the balance between family and government support? It's also interesting that finding qualified staff, working out how to pay for services, raising the image of the care worker, equity for rural residents, and finding a balance between social and medical care systems in China, as well as these are common issues across developed and developing countries, certainly faced in the West as well. Despite the many differences between our countries, it seems there are some real opportunities for collaboration between the U.S. as well as other Western countries and China. Some great opportunities for collaboration and cross-country innovations, I think. Thank you so much for a really informative discussion of aging in China. And thank you, Dr. Wang.
The Gerontological Society of America was founded in 1945 to cultivate excellence in interdisciplinary aging research and education to advance innovations in practice and policy. For more information about GSA, visit geron.org. G-E-R-O-N.org.